please vote to indicate their presence.
The roll shows 16 members present.
Please stand for the invocation by our chaplain today, Dr. Paul Buran from the Resurrection Lutheran Church.
Let us reflect and give thanks. Gracious God, our Heavenly Father, you lavish with generosity every good and perfect gift. You've buried in the earth gold, silver, and oil. You place in the seas an abundance of fish. You've covered many of the mountains with trees stretching skyward. You've placed on the land bountiful animals, caribou, reindeer, and moose. You've called us to be responsible caretakers. We praise you and give you thanks for the bounty of your creation. As we face and make decisions, help us to be your diligent and wise stewards. Give us direction for the right uses and save us from the greed that abuses, that we and generations to come might rejoice with us in the lavish goodness and abundance of your hand. This I pray in the name of Jesus, who came not to be served, but to serve. Amen.
Amen. Senator Green, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the secretary please certify the journal?
I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 114th legislative day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Move and ask unanimous consent the journals be approved as certified by the Senate Secretary.
Without objection, the journals will be approved as certified. Senator Hoffman.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread upon the journal. Brings us down to introduction of guests. We have guests for introduction today. Seeing none, messages from the governor.
Message dated May 14th stating, I have signed the following bill and passed by the first session of the Alaska State Legislature, and I'm transmitting the engrossed and enrolled copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. CS for House Bill Number 249, Judiciary Amended, Restraint of Trade, Attorney Fees and Costs, Chapter 19, SLA 2003. CS for Senate Bill Number 43, Finance, Extend State Medical Board, Chapter 20, SLA 2003. CS for House Bill Number 64, Judiciary, Purchase of Structured Settlements, Chapter Number 21, SLA 2003. Those are all the messages from the governor this morning.
Messages from the House.
Message dated May 14th stating the House has ratified the appointment of Marianne Stillner as a public member to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics. Messages dated May 14th stating the House has passed the following in return. House Concurrent Resolution Number 17 by the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee. Suspending Rules 24C, 35, 41B, and 42E, Uniform Rules of the Alaska State Legislature concerning Senate Bill Number 25, relating to the acquisition of teachers' housing by regional educational attendance areas into teachers' housing loan programs in the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
That will be held on the Secretary's desk pending a concurrence vote.
CS for House Bill Number 245, Judiciary, effective date failed by the House Judiciary Committee. An act relating to certain suits and claims by members of the military services relating to certain suits and claims regarding acts or omissions of the organized militia, relating to workers' compensation and death benefits for members of the organized militia, relating to liability arising out of certain search and rescue, civil defense, fire management, and firefighting activities.
Judiciary and Finance.
CS for House Bill Number 251, Finance Amended by the House Finance Committee. An act relating to exemption of certain foreign pleasure craft from the mandatory pilotage requirement and to civil fines imposed on the owner or operator of a pleasure craft of foreign registry and providing for an effective date.
Transportation and Finance.
Message dated May 14th stating the House has passed. Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 25, Finance. An act relating to the acquisition of teachers' housing by regional educational attendance areas and to teachers' housing loan programs in the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and providing for an effective date with the following amendments. House CS for Senate Bill Number 25, Rules, an act relating to the acquisition of teachers' housing by regional educational attendance areas and to a teacher housing loan program and a teachers and nurses housing loan program in the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and providing for an effective date and it is transmitted for consideration.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Senate concur with the House amendments to committee substitute for Senate Bill 25, thus adopting the House committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 25. For the members' information, the changes occur on page 2, line 1. They insert nurses into the program, and the other related changes occur, but mostly they inserted nurses to qualify into the program. Section number 2 on lines 13 through 19 define what the nurse, how a nurse falls into that. And the sponsor of the bill, Senator Wilkin, concurs, and we recommend a yes vote.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. As we all know, there is a severe nursing shortage in many parts of our state. So with the addition of nurses to the loan program, I think this is a wonderful change. I think it was another bill in another place that was pulled from committee and placed into this legislation. It moves in a positive direction, so I too recommend a yes vote.
Is there further debate? Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall the Senate concur on the House amendments to committee substitute for Senate Bill 25 Finance? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, tally the roll.
17 yeas, 1 nay.
So by a vote of 17 yeas, 1 nay, the Senate has concurred in the House amendments to committee substitute for Senate Bill 25. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent. We bring up House Concurrent Resolution 17 at this time.
Without objection, that will be brought up.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move House Concurrent Resolution 17.
House Concurrent Resolution is brought up. Mr. Minority Leader.
Can we have an ease, please?
Senate come back to order. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. At this time, I'd ask unanimous consent that I remove my motion on HCR 17.
Without objection, the motion will be removed.
And thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on final passage on concurrence on Senate Bill 25 be considered the vote of the effective date clause.
Without objection, the vote on final passage on the concurrence will be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Thank you, Mr. President. Again, I ask unanimous consent to bring up HCR 17 at this time.
Okay. HCR 17 has been moved. It should have just been distributed. It is the title change amendment that goes along with the concurrence vote we just took.
I move title change. I move HCR 17 at this time.
Is there any debate? Seeing none, members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
So by vote of 18 yeas, 0 nays, House Concurrent Resolution 17 has passed the Senate.
Message dated May 14th, stating the House has passed Senate Bill number 124, effective date failed with the following amendment. House CS for Senate Bill number 124, Finance, an act relating to grants for alcoholism and drug abuse programs and providing for an effective date, and it is transmitted for consideration.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate concur with House amendments to Senate Bill 124, thus adopting House committee substitute for Senate Bill 124. For the members' information, the changes occur on page 1, line 2, in the insert effective date. We recommend a yes vote.
Senator Green.
Call the Senate.
The call has been placed on the Senate. We can continue debate while the call is being satisfied. Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would recommend a no vote on concurrence. We should delay this negative action taking place as long as possible. So that's the reason for my recommendation of a no vote.
Do we have any further debate? Seeing none, if we'll stand at ease while this call is being satisfied. The Senate come back to order. For the recess, the concurrence motion had been made that the Senate concur on the House amendments to Senate Bill 124. Is there any further debate? Seeing none, members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
12 yeas, 8 nays.
So by a vote of 12 yeas, 8 nays, Senate has concurred in the House amendments to Senate Bill 124. Mr. Majority Leader.
Move the effective date clause.
The effective date clause has been moved. Members may proceed to vote. Secretary, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, tally the roll.
12 yeas, 8 nays.
So by a vote of 12 yeas, 8 nays, the effective date clause has failed to pass the Senate.
Message dated May 14th stating the House has passed Senate Joint Resolution Number 10 with the following amendment. House CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 10, Judiciary, relating to the Pledge of Allegiance, and it is transmitted for consideration.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Senate concur with House amendments to Senate Joint Resolution 10, thus adopting House Committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 10. For the members' information, the changes occur on page 2, lines 26. Inserted was the name, the Honorable Theodore B. Olson, Solicitor General of the United States. He is the attorney representing the petitioner of the United States of America in the lawsuit. We recommend a yes vote on concurrence.
Do we have any further debate? Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall the Senate concur in the House amendments to Senate Joint Resolution Number 10? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
20 yeas, 0 nays.
So by a vote of 20 yeas, 0 nays, Senate has concurred in the House amendments to Senate Joint Resolution 10.
Those are all the messages from the House, Mr. President.
Communications. Senator Wilkin.
Mr. President, move and ask unanimous consent that we return to introduction of guests.
Without objection, we'll go back to introduction of guests.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the Ziegler Gallery today, I'm pleased to see a friend of mine from Fairbanks and a constituent. He's down in Juneau today working on charitable gaming issues. Please welcome to the Senate, Mr. Dave Lambert.
Do we have any other guests for introduction? Brings us back down to communications.
I have no communications this morning.
Reports of standing committees.
Message dated May 14th stating, in accordance with AS 3905080, the Senate Judiciary Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointment be forwarded to the Senate floor. Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, Marianne Stillner. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the individual during any further sessions. Signing the report, Senators Terrio, French, Ogun.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate confirm Marianne Stillner as a public member to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics. Recommend a yes vote.
Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would echo the comments of the Majority Leader. I participated in the interview today of Ms. Stillner. She struck me as an apolitical, concerned citizen with a strong background, principally in nursing, and that she had been approached by a Supreme Court justice for her interest in serving, that she was eager to participate in the public process, that she seemed to hew to a pretty middle road. She'd never participated in any political campaign or participated in any legislative matters before. My only reservation was that we didn't get to meet her face-to-face. I always like to see a person just to pick up on their demeanor. But she struck me as a commonsensical person who'd do a good job, so I'm going to recommend a yes vote as well.
Okay, if there's no further debate, the question before the body is, shall Marianne Stillner be confirmed as a member to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
20 yeas, 0 nays.
By a vote of 20 yeas to 0 nays, Marianne Stillner has been confirmed as public member to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics.
Report dated May 14th stating in accordance with AS 3905080, the Senate Judiciary Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointment be forwarded to the Senate to a joint session for consideration. Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar Association, William A. Granger. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the individual during any further session. Signing the report, Senator Seekins, Chair, Senators Terrio, Ogun, French. The Finance Committee considered Senate Bill Number 215, Seafood and Food Safety Laboratory, and recommends the previous State Affairs Committee substitute. Previous fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Wilkin, co-chair, Senators Taylor, Ben Stevens. Signing no recommendation, Senators Olson, Bundy, Hoffman. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill Number 61, Finance, Oil and Gas Tax Credit for Exploration Development, and recommends adoption of the previous Resources Senate Committee Substitute, previous zero fiscal notes, signing due pass, Senator Wilkin, co-chair, Senators Taylor, Ben Stevens, signing no recommendation, Senators Olson, Bundy, Hoffman. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill Number 154, Finance, Underschool-Age Students. Previous fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Wilkin, co-chair, Senators Taylor, Bundy, Ben Stevens, signing do not pass, Senators Hoffman, Olson. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Finance Committee considered House Bill Number 171, amended, repealed charter school grants. Previous fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Wilkin, co-chair, Senator Bundy, Ben Stevens, signing no recommendation, Senators Taylor, Hoffman, Olson. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill Number 174, Finance Amended, Correspondence Study. Previous fiscal notes, signing due pass, Senator Wilkin, co-chair, Senators Bundy, Ben Stevens, signing no recommendation, Senators Hoffman, Taylor, Olson. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Finance Committee considered House Bill Number 225, Monopoly and Restraint of Trade Actions. Previous indeterminate fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Wilkin, co-chair, Senators Taylor, Bundy, Ben Stevens, signing no recommendation, Senators Hoffman, Olson. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill Number 210, Resources, CHITNA, DIPNET Fisheries. Previous fiscal and zero fiscal note, signing do pass, Senator Wilkin, co-chair, Senators Taylor, Bundy, Ben Stevens, signing do not pass, Senators Hoffman, Olson. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill Number 266, Finance Elections. Previous fiscal and zero fiscal notes, signing do pass, Senator Wilkin, co-chair, Senators Taylor, Olson, Bundy, Ben Stevens, Hoffman. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered House Bill Number 313, State Procurement Pilot Program. Previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Bundy, Chair, Senator Seekins, signing no recommendation, Senators French, Gary Stevens. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Judiciary Committee considered Senate Joint Resolution Number 3, Constitutional Amendment, Appropriation Spending Limit. New zero fiscal note, signing no recommendation, Senator Ogun, Vice Chair, Senators French, Terrio. The resolution has a further referral to the Finance Committee. Those are all the standing committee reports this morning.
Reports of special committees.
The World Trade and State Federal Relations Committee considered House Joint Resolution Number 28, amended, Taiwan Trade and World Health Assembly. Previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Cowdrey, Chair, Senators Guest, Terrio, Seekins. The resolution has a further referral to the State Affairs Committee. I have no further special committee reports.
Introduction of Senate resolutions.
I have no Senate resolutions.
Introduction of Senate bills.
Senate Bill Number 225, an act placing the Executive Director of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault in the partially exempt service and staff of the Council in the classified service.
State Affairs and Judiciary.
Senate Bill Number 226 by the Senate Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to receipts of certain state agencies and the accounting for and disposition of those receipts and providing for an effective date.
Finance.
Senate Bill Number 227 by Senator Gary Stevens, an act relating to municipal initiative and referendum elections.
CNRA and State Affairs.
Those are all the Senate bills for introduction this morning.
Brings us down to the daily calendar.
Senate Bill Number 8 by Senators Davis, Dyson, an act relating to tampering with public records. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered the bill. New zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Dyson, Chair, Senator Davis. Signing no recommendation, Senators Guess, Wilkins. Signing amend, Senate. That was in error. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill and recommended it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute. New zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Seekins, Chair, Senators French, Ellis. Signing no recommendation, Senators Terrio, Ogun. There is a Judiciary Committee substitute.
Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that we consider the CS for Senate Bill number 8, Judiciary, in lieu of the original bill.
This Judiciary CS has been moved in lieu of the original bill. Is there objection? Seeing none?
I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. President, move and ask unanimous consent the bill be considered gross, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, we will advance to third reading.
CS for Senate Bill number 8, Judiciary, an act relating to tampering with public records.
We are in third reading. Do we have debate? Seeing none, question before the body is?
Could I have a brief explanation of what we're fixing?
Brief explanation on the content of the bill? Brief at ease? Yeah. The body will come back to order. Senator Davis, the question was just a brief explanation of the issue that's being dealt with in the bill.
All right, I'd like to address that. I thought I'd put all this information on your desk, but if you didn't get that, Senate Bill 8 amends the crime of tampering with public records in the first degree by elevating the C felony, a new form of crime for persons that tamper with records. And it's the Chapter 47 that we're dealing with, and also the protection of children and vulnerable adults. And we're dealing with Chapter 10, 12, 17, and 20, and 24. If anyone tampered with the records, the felony has been lifted to, the class has been lifted to a C felony. It's for the protection of those children. When this bill was first introduced by me, I introduced it just to make sure that we did whatever we could to protect children that was in the custody of the state and came up under Title 47. At the same time, another bill was introduced that would cover adults as well. What had happened through the process, the two bills have been rolled together, and so now it covers adults and children. If there's anything else in particular that you need an answer on, I think we have the information here.
Thank you. Senator Taylor?
If you could just give us an example of how the tampering with someone's records might impact them, or if someone else could.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President, and I appreciate the question. I think both the sponsor of this bill and I were engaged to think about this when the very highly publicized case in Florida of a young child that got lost in their record-keeping system and was not visited or even paid attention to for a year and a half, and in fact died, and a kid in state custody. And there was at least very bad handling of the case and so on, and courts will find out whether or not that was covered up. And what we're trying to do here is make sure that that people pay attention to these vulnerable children and that they are visited on schedule and their welfare is looked after as well as possible and that there is no cover-up of that. When I got drafted my version, it's been rolled into this one, with my cheerful assent, I also realized that there may be vulnerable adults. My office in years past has had a number of inquiries about people concerned about their aged parents, some of whom were incompetent, that were in senior care facilities and were perhaps being abused and neglected, and we're wanting to make sure that there's no cover-up of those records about that. If there has been abuse or neglect, that the records are not tampered with to cover that up. I also have another huge issue for me, and that is male rape in prisons. I think that our correction system does an exemplary job of preventing inmate-on-inmate assaults of any kind, including the sexual nature, and staff-on-inmate assaults, and the record is very good, and I want to make sure that there's no attempt by the managers of those facilities to cover up any crimes against persons that are happening. So I have sat and looked at autopsy pictures of children that died in state custody in this state, and I know of no deliberate actions on the part of state employees that led to that, but certainly there was some things that could have done much better. What we're doing here is to making sure that this gets a high priority in all state employees who have a responsibility for looking after vulnerable people, and that there's a very strong message sent that tampering with those or covering it up is raised to the level of a C felony, and I commend the sponsor of this bill for bringing it forward and was delighted to work with her on it.
Any further questions? Seeing none, question before the body is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 8, Judiciary, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Senator Seekins. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
20 yeas, 0 nays.
By a vote of 20 yeas, 0 nays, committee substitute for Senate Bill 8, Judiciary, has passed the Senate. Senator Lincoln.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be shown as a co-sponsor on CSSB 8.
Senator is asked to be shown as a co-sponsor, along with Senators French, Bundy, and Cowdery, and Senator Elton, and Ellis. Okay, next item.
Senate Bill number 26 by Senators Elton and Taylor, Wilkin, Davis, Lincoln, an act relating to state employees who are called to active duty as reserve or auxiliary members of the Armed Forces of the United States and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading. Oh, I'm sorry. No, we're in second reading.
The State Affairs Committee considered the bill and recommended it be replaced with a State Affairs Committee substitute. A new indeterminate fiscal note signing DuPass, Senator Gary Stevens, Chair, Senators Cowdery, Hoffman, Ogun, Guest. The Finance Committee considered the bill and recommended adoption of the previous State Affairs Committee substitute. Previous indeterminate fiscal note citing DuPass, Senators Green, Wilkin, co-chairs, Senators Taylor, Hoffman, Olson, Bundy, Ben Stevens. There is a State Affairs Committee substitute.
Senator Gary Stevens.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the CS for Senate Bill number 26 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Senate State Affairs CS will be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Moving to ask unanimous consent the bill be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, the bill will be advanced to third reading.
CS for Senate Bill number 26, State Affairs, an act relating to state employees who are called to active duty as reserve or auxiliary members of the Armed Forces of the United States and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading. Do we have debate? Senator Elton.
Mr. President, I'll just be very brief. This bill essentially allows the governor to do what many major corporations around the nation do and several other states. It allows the governor to backfill any salary of a state employee who is also a reservist called to active duty so that they don't suffer financially and their families don't suffer financially. Also allows the governor to make a determination on whether or not to extend benefits that would otherwise be lost to that reservist and to that reservist family. It would affect... there are 43 state employees who serve in the Army National Guard, 83 in the Air National Guard, and 12 state employees that serve in the State Defense Force. I just want to say that I appreciate the support the bill has had to this point and would appreciate support on the floor today. Thank you.
Any further debate? Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. President, I call the Senate.
Senate is called. We can continue debate. While the call is satisfied, is there a continuing debate? Seeing none, we'll take a recess. The Senate come back to order. Before the at-ease, the motion was made for final passage of Senate Bill 26. Is there any further debate? Seeing none, members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
20 yeas, 0 nays.
So by a vote of 20 yeas, 0 nays, committee substitute for Senate Bill 26, State Affairs, has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that and ask unanimous consent to vote on final passage be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the vote on final passage will be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
CS.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be added as a co-sponsor of Senate Bill 26.
Senator is asked to be shown as a co-sponsor along with Senators Ben Stevens, Guess, Cowdery, Dyson, Gary Stevens, Wagner, Seekins, Olson, and myself, please. Next item.
CS for House Bill number 120, rules amended by the House Rules Committee, an act extending service contracts from regulation as insurance relating to insurance licensing for motor vehicle service contracts and home warranties and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill, previous zero fiscal notes, signing DuPass, Senator Bundy chair, Senators Davis, French, Gary Stevens. I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Move and ask unanimous consent the bill be considered gross, advanced third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, the bill will advance to third reading.
CS for House Bill number 120, rules amended, an act excluding service contracts from regulation as insurance relating to insurance licensing for motor vehicle service contracts and home warranties and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading. Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Alaska laws and regulations are silent regarding service contracts, such as repair and maintenance agreements, for appliances, consumer goods, household systems, such as heating, ventilation, air conditioning systems. The Division of Insurance has advised that they consider these agreements under the broad definition of insurance, but have not regulated in this area. House Bill 120 makes it clear that service contracts are not regulated under Title 21 insurance. Companies or employees offering service contracts do not need a license, then, to sell these policies. Service contracts do not have certain fundamental characteristics of insurance because they do not cover accidental damage due to fire, floods, earthquake, etc. And service contracts do not cover maintenance or repair normally not covered by insurance. You'll note that this bill also includes, it does not include from that exclusion, mechanical breakdown insurance, a contract that requires an indemnity payment per incident and the payment exceeds the purchase price of the property serviced, a contract to provide service on a motor vehicle subject to registration, and a home warranty. So it makes it very clear in the overall definition of service contract what shall be regulated by the Division of Insurance and what is not, and clarifies an issue that has risen to great prominence since in the last administration they started to roll everything under this title, and we'd appreciate your support.
Is there further debate? Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 120, rules amended, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
19 yeas, 1 nay.
So by a vote of 19 yeas, 1 nay, committee substitute for House Bill 120, rules amended, has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move and ask unanimous consent to vote on final passage be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the vote on final passage will be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
CS for House Bill number 250, financed by the House Finance Committee, an act relating to protests of state contract awards to claims on state contracts, to the arbitration of certain state construction contract claims, and to hearings and appeals under the state procurement code, making conforming amendments to the state procurement code and providing for an effective date. The Transportation Committee considered the bill, previous indeterminate fiscal notes, signing DuPass, Senator Cowdery chair, signing no recommendations, Senators Lincoln, Terrio. I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Move and ask unanimous consent. The bill be considered gross, advanced third reading, placed on final passage.
Without objection, the bill will advance to third reading.
CS for House Bill number 250, finance, an act relating to protests of state contract awards to claims on state contracts, to the arbitration of certain state construction contract claims, and to hearings and appeals under the state procurement code, making conforming amendments in the state procurement code and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading. Do we have debate? Senator Cowdery.
Thank you. Construction claims occur when the contractor and the state disagree on some of the items of the scope of the work. Currently, there's no review by an independent party. Delays are frequent, and most contractors can't afford to participate in the claims process because of the cost of the legal costs. The purpose of House Bill 250 is to speed up the process, create fairness for both parties, and reduce the cost of settling these claims. And also to permit a contractor to seek arbitration permit parties to agree to binding arbitration and on appeals and tighten timelines and eliminate duplications of the effort and hold hearing officers and arbitrators to deadlines. And it also allows contractors to recover some of their claim costs if they prevail in these claims. I'd urge everybody to support this.
Do we have any further debate? Senator Wilken.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move and ask unanimous consent I be shown as a cross-sponsor for House Bill 250, if available.
Senator is asked to be shown as a cross-sponsor, along with Senators Cowdery, Taylor, Wagner, Dyson, and Seekins, and Ogun. Is there any further debate? Senator Taylor.
I wanted to personally thank the chairman of the Transportation Committee for this bill. I had the privilege and honor of serving with him in the last couple of years on the Transportation Committee, and we held extensive hearings in Anchorage on this very issue. And I was shocked to find out the level to which our state agencies had denied claims made on contracts and then had stalled and delayed the resolution of those claims. And to give you a quick hypothetical of what happens when that occurs, contractor takes on, say, building a road. Because of things unforeseen, additional claims occur where he has to do additional work. And on the job, he's told, oh, just go forward with it, and you keep building the road, and we'll settle this up at the end of the claim, at the end of the construction. He gets done with the job. All the claims have been submitted. And then either the state rules against him, which if they did, he could then go on to court and get it resolved. In most instances, they didn't rule. It continued to be wrapped up and rolled around an axle, so to speak, within the administrative arena. And literally, while that case is pending, all of that contractor's bonding capacity is tied up because his bonds are there to guarantee performance of the job, and those bonds are subject to the state's claims if they have any. The most recent example in my district was the repair done on the Columbia by Ketchikan Shipyards, who informed the state up front that the certain things that the state wanted in that repair job could not even be delivered to the site before the end of the contract was due. And they said, don't worry about it. Go to work right now. Get that thing out of your yard as quick as you can and handshake. We will work with you at the end of the contract. What happened at the end of the contract was the state went into the newspapers and started talking about how they were going to charge penalty provisions against the shipyard because the ship wasn't out of repairs yet. Then they continued to tie up and hold up the bonding capacity of the Ketchikan shipyards. Because that bonding capacity was tied up, they were unable to bid on several million dollars of additional work. They almost bankrupted that outfit because they refused to move through promptly and quickly and resolve those claims. We had testimony in Anchorage of construction companies that had been bankrupted by that kind of a practice. This legislation is critical to making certain that those things and those abuses of that process don't happen in the future. And it's because of the attention that the chairman of the Transportation Committee has paid to this issue that we have it before us, and I really applaud him for his efforts.
Do we have any further debate? Seeing none, question before the body is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 250 finance pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
20 yeas, 0 nays.
So by a vote of 20 yeas, 0 nays, committee substitute for House Bill 250 finance has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Move and ask unanimous consent vote on final passage be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the vote on final passage will be considered the vote on the effective date clause. Senator Guess.
I have a brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Will the Senate come back to order? Mr. Majority Leader.
Move the Senate stand in recess till 4 p.m.
We're in recess till 4 p.m. I know there are a number of Senate come back to order. Before we took the recess, I believe the next item was Senate Bill 30. Madam Secretary.
CS for Senate Bill number 30, Judiciary Amended, an act relating to information and services available to pregnant women and other persons and ensuring informed consent before an abortion may be performed except in cases of medical emergency.
We are in third reading. Do we have debate? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Since the early 70s, there's been a requirement that performing a termination of pregnancy or an abortion in the state requires informed consent, and that's in regulations. This bill before us merely puts that requirement into statute. It is certainly only that which I believe all competent practitioners are already doing. This bill makes it easier, but in that the physician may, if he or she chooses, go ahead, continue to use whatever informed consent procedure they have been using, or if they choose, they can use the state-provided information, which will be available online and will be constantly updated by the department, and the department will provide all of the different languages that the information might need to be placed put into, thus relieving the physician practitioner of having to do that himself. This, in addition, it relieves the doctor practitioner of and protects them from liability in that it gives them immunity from prosecution if they choose to use the state-provided information, that is, from liability from failure to provide sufficient information for in order for the woman in question to make an informed decision. The one change here that is can be considered to be more stringent is that it requires that the person seeking abortion have the information 24 hours in advance of the procedure. With the amendment that you, in my view, wisely allowed to be adopted yesterday, it allows the person seeking the abortion to state that they had received the information before the procedure, so that someone who is needing to fly from one location to another to get the abortion can have gotten information either off the internet or by mail or by fax, and therefore by, I think, eliminating most folks who would have a problem with the requirements of the bill and that it might require them to stay at a location where they've traveled for the service for a longer period of time. Might also remind you that an abortion is not a simple procedure. It's not something which you do at a drive-up. It requires both preparation and information and post-operative care and observation. It's not my view that this will increase the time that competent practitioners are spending with their patients or that the patients are in or near the facility. In the three public hearings that this bill has had, that there are, that at least from the most of the practitioners that testified, claimed that they were giving all the information now. And if that's true, there would be very little change for them. The only additional change is that they will be required to keep a record of that they delivered the information in that patient's file, which, as I understand it, is common procedure for all doctors anyways. And we also heard testimony, and I have a packet of it's almost 7/8 of an inch thick from women who are recommending that we be pass this bill, and many of them have tragic stories about their own experience and failure to get all the information that they needed when they made this very important decision in their life. I think this bill is not anti-abortion. I think it is very much contributes to and recognizes the dignity and the intelligence of the women who are making this very important decision and gives them an opportunity to get access to the information that they need to make that decision. And I encourage you to pass it. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have further debate? Seeing none, Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. President. This bill puts up an artificial legal barrier between a woman and her health care provider. It is, I believe, an affront to doctors, and I believe it discriminates against rural women. The senator from Eagle River indicated that there is now an amendment in this bill which clears up the problem that rural women would face should they want to come to town to get an abortion, and that they could get the information they need ahead of time over the internet. That would provide them the 24-hour waiting period, come to town and get their abortion and go home without having to wait. I don't think that's quite right under the terms of the statute that we're considering here today. The statute copy that I have in front of me indicates that the information that's going to be provided to the woman has to be provided individually in an do both of those things over the telephone or via the internet before the 24-hour waiting period kicks in. It's fairly clear that what has to happen is that the woman has to come to town, go to a clinic, see a doctor. The doctor has to provide the gestational estimation of the pregnancy, give her the information, and tell her she can go look it up on the internet. She comes back 24 hours later, signs a piece of paper saying, yes, I've read all this, and then he is okay to go ahead and give the abortion. And he better do that. And he better do that, because we're also going to make him liable to her for compensatory and punitive damages for having induced an abortion in violation of A5 of this section. If he doesn't maintain if he doesn't comply with this law, he is on the hook for compensatory and punitive damages. So I think that any good doctor would be very nervous in the face of this legislation and would be careful to comply with it rigorously, or else face huge lawsuit. It's an affront to doctors. As we just heard, any good doctor already does this procedure, gives good counsel, gives a waiting period if necessary. And in that respect, I think that it just makes good human sense. Some folks, a doctor's going to talk to his patient. He's going to analyze whether she's ready to go forward with the procedure or not. And if it looks like she's a little bit hesitant, he'll send her home to think about it, or she'll say, I need to go home and think about it, and they'll work it out between the two of them in the privacy of his or her office, and in maintaining the privacy of that decision. So I see this as putting up an artificial barrier that doesn't have to exist. It's an affront to doctors in that it mandates legally that they do something that they're already doing, and it continues to discriminate against rural women, because it makes them have to wait 2 days here in town or wherever it is they go to get their abortion. It also affords no exception for rape and incest. And having worked in that area, having spent a year of my life prosecuting those crimes, I can tell you that there are heinous things that stepfathers and other people in a house will do to a 13, 14, 15-year-old girl that do not bear repeating in this body. But I can tell you, in at least one of the cases that I prosecuted, the proof that I had that there had been an illegal sexual relationship between the stepfather and his brain-damaged stepdaughter was the baby that she delivered. And so I know that there are folks out there who will go and see a doctor having been raped, having been the victim of incest. And I think putting another 24-hour waiting period on them is inappropriate. It's one more hurdle for them to jump over in getting through the pain of their victimization. Finally, this bill, as far as I can tell, applies to no other medical procedure except for this one. There's no other medical procedure: open heart surgery, leg amputation, brain surgery, bone marrow transplants, that mandates in writing a 24-hour waiting period. Now, why is that? Why have we picked this one exact procedure out? Why this? And I think that that question is answered by looking into what is the ultimate object. And the ultimate object is to stop abortion. And the ultimate object is real. I went to the internet and did some internet research on this and typed in informed consent abortion in Google and brought up the first couple hundred hits. And as I reeled through those, I found a website called afterabortion.org. They're an anti-abortion organization. And on their website, they had a document called Informed Consent, the Abortion Industry's Achilles Heel. And in that document, the author wrote, "It is my hope that most readers will recognize that this issue of physicians' duties and patients' rights truly is the Achilles heel of the abortion industry. If abortionists were actually held accountable for screening of patients and ensuring that a woman's consent to an abortion is truly free and informed, they would go out of business." That really tells you all you need to know about this bill and where it fits into the spectrum of abortion's rights. If a woman is truly informed, an abortionist will go out of business. That tells you all you need to know. This bill is another step in making abortions illegal. And for that reason, I'm going to vote against it, and I would encourage the other members of this body to do so. Thank you.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I am not going to echo a lot of the comments by the previous speaker because I agree with him and I think the points were well made. I just want to add one thing. I mean, I can't think of why anybody would find it necessary to delineate a government role for a communication between a doctor and a woman. I don't see a role for government in that. I don't see why it's necessary that we prescribe for people unknown and situations unknown, why we decide what kind of communication should be held, when it should be held, why it should be held. I just think that, I guess I'm taking the conservative position, that there are some things that government ought not be involved in. I'm not going to say an awful lot more, but I am going to ask a question because I think it needs to be answered, perhaps by some of the attorneys in the body. But if we look at the language on page 5, beginning on line 20, it essentially says that a physician must delineate the nature and risks of undergoing or not undergoing the proposed procedure that a reasonable patient would consider material to making a voluntary and informed decision of whether to undergo the procedure. I know that there is a doctrine, a legal doctrine, about what a reasonable person may or may not be. I don't know of any doctrine that determines what a reasonable patient may be. We just, the prior speaker talked about situations in which a woman may be visiting a doctor because of a situation of rape or incest. I mean, right away, we know that this is going to be one of the most emotionally charged discussions this woman has ever had. Is that person, is that patient a reasonable patient? What is a reasonable patient? And it seems to me we need to know that before we pass this bill, because we're increasing the liability of physicians who are going to have to make that determination in situations that any one of us would define as not being very reasonable. And we're not even the one that is having the conversation. Hopefully, some of the attorneys can tell us what they think the legal definition of a reasonable patient is.
Further debate? Senator Guest? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. President. Certainly, as we look at this bill, there are a number of differing views that, and it's a polarizing issue that we look at when you deal with the abortion issue. But as I have evaluated it, and what really drives me are my life's experiences. Being in business, until you've been in business and know how difficult it is to make payroll, you don't have the clear understanding of what it's like there. And those people that have been in business and have had difficult times where your cash flow is down, whether you're a pilot, or you're out there where the weather's getting bad, you're iced up, fuel's getting low, As a native raised in the village, you raised with those supportive family values that we consider near and dear to us by the elders that have taught us the traditional way of not just life, but of thinking. Today, as we look at this particular bill, and on this floor, I have reiterated some of the experiences that I've had as a physician and have enjoyed a special interest in doing obstetrics. Certainly, there have been some very trying times during my medical career where I wished I was not in the position I was in. As a young physician, I was involved with a 15-year-old schoolgirl out in Gamble who was pregnant, was called out there on a medevac in the middle of January. It was 40 below. I didn't want to be there. The young girl didn't want to be there. But as I can remember, examining her in that clinic with no other help around, I can remember, to make a long story short, sticking my fingers into the birth canal and not having a head there. And what came out was a foot, and ended up delivering a 7-month-old infant out in this remote, out 30 miles from Russia, in this remote site. It's those kind of experiences that you never forget. The last time a C-section was done in Nome, I did it, and because we had no anesthesiologist or anesthesia, we ended up doing it under local anesthesia, running the hospital out of xylocaine, ended up using marcaine to try and finish the procedure. Obviously, there's nothing more heart-rending than the first experience I ever had when I was still a health aide, going out to a difficulty at one of the fish camp tents. The wind was blowing. The lady was inside, had been in labor. The labor had stopped. It was several hours that it stopped. And she delivered a stillborn, wishing for that baby to cry, I can remember. If they would give me any chance, I would work hard on that. As time has gone on, my political career has developed. Certainly, there have been other issues and important evolutions within my thinking. And as I look back on some of the things that I did back then, and thankfully was able to go ahead and bypass some of the severe negative aspects of doing medicine, because in practicing medicine, you are dealing with somebody. In a particular case of OB, you're not dealing with just the somebody that's in front of you. You're dealing with somebody that's going to probably outlive you. Certainly, there are emotional issues out there. But one of the things that I have learned is that I have done procedures in the hospital. And having gone to law school, I realized that along the way, many of the informed consent forms that I had been dealing with were less than complete. As the legal mind begins to go ahead and digest, or goes ahead and starts to evaluate where the holes are in the informed consent forms and the information that I was giving out, it became evident to me that the sloppy informed consent issues or informed consent forms that I was using laid me wide open. And I can tell you that as a physician, the last thing you want to be hearing is a phone call ring and the receptionist say, "And which law firm do you represent?" It's a paralyzing experience to realize that now you've got somebody that's got a fair amount of education is going to be filing a complaint against you, and you're going to have to put life as you know it to an end to try and answer that complaint. And that's just the complaint. whether you're right or you're wrong, whether they gave the right information or not, is going to be evaluated by somebody that's adversarial to your position. That's going to be there to look at what, if anything, I can find that's done wrong. Even after you go ahead and answer those questions that are there, it's something you never forget. I, fortunately, have not had the experience of having my family, but I've seen other physicians who have been exonerated later on. And so because of that, as I look at this particular bill, the one thing that I do see is that there are specific things that are outlined that say that if you have covered these issues and you have covered this information, that you are protected, that no matter how that no matter how smart or how much you may be challenged by an attorney with a different perspective than yours, who is looking out, who is the representing the plaintiff, that you have something that, yes, I am mandated to give this, and this is what was given to the patient, and because of that, I am covered. That will put an end to some of the lawsuits that will put an end to the internal turmoil that keeps physicians up at night, because they know they are being evaluated by somebody that doesn't have their best interest in at heart. And I will admit that there are physicians, having been on the medical board, there are physicians that need to be challenged, that need to have their licenses taken away because they practice bad medicine. But there also needs to be something or somewhere where it's defined that, yes, I gave the necessary information as has been put forth in this statute to this particular person. Having had the experience of somebody from my district, from my area, having gone down to have a procedure done in Anchorage, at that point they opted for a laminaria treatment, which is a highly saline bit of seaweed that is put in position to go ahead and terminate the pregnancy. Halfway through this procedure, 12 hours into it, the young lady changed her mind. Actually had the implant taken out. Later on, she decided that she didn't want to continue on with her pregnancy, had the second insertion put in, and then continued on, and was seen back up there in the hospital. And it's those kind of things that I have been working with and have dealt with in my career as a physician. And I'm not saying that there aren't problems with carrying a pregnancy to term, because there are other issues that need to be addressed as well. There's postpartum depression. A good family friend of ours was found in a pool of blood when her husband came home after a hard day's work. She suffered from postpartum depression so severe that she ended her life. There are other issues that are there too. You have the procedural psychological problems that go along with the termination. That needs to be addressed. And so I'm not saying that there are easy answers to this particular issue that's there. But as I read this bill, I see three aspects to it. One has to do with the information that's given out, that at least needs to be there, the unbiased scientific information as is addressed in the statute. There is the emotional issue of the woman's reproductive system, as well as the unemancipated minor that's also addressed in there. But the main thing that I see is the informed consent, because as I look at this bill, And as I look at life in general, I want to unencumber the physician as much as possible. Because if you're worried about the person, the patient that's over in the hospital, as you're in your clinic, that's having problems, and the nurse is calling and saying, you know, she just keeps bleeding, we've just got a blood count on her, your hematocrit and hemoglobin are going down, and you've got this other issue back over here, you know, did I check the right box to make sure that that she's been informed of all the options that are available to her, as well as what she's going to be going through, because obviously the person going through it, as well as some of the people that are close relatives or friends of hers, are also involved. To unencumber the physician's mind, at least from my standpoint, and to know that the patient has been presented with information that has been outlined here within the statute, at least puts it my mind at rest that I have a defense should I get a phone call from an opposing attorney stating they are looking for my medical records on the patient that is involved with me. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Do we have further debate? Senator Guest.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would disagree with the member from Turnagain, my good friend. I don't think this is a pro-life, pro-choice bill. Although I think there's a group of individuals, I don't think it was meant to be. I think there's a group of individuals who would like it to go that way, and I just think it's a bad bill. Plain and simple. I don't think it was meant to be a bad bill. I have a lot of respect for the member who put it in. I sat through 4 days of testimony, but I unfortunately could not make it when the bill passed out. I also, to be honest, and I hope I don't offend my friend from Eagle River, as the only 30-something-year-old woman on this floor, find it amazingly offensive. And I think for all women, at least of my age, or at least the people that I represent, believe that. But I'd like to get to the bill and why, unfortunately, I just think it misses the mark. There are issues such as the whole internet cost online hasn't even been looked at. The fiscal note on this hasn't even been looked at. How the state and some bureaucrats can update this hasn't even been looked at. That's at the least of the worst ends. On the most is that it's a poorly written bill that uses things like unbiased and scientific and doesn't define them, and then sits there and says, well, if you give the government the bureaucratic information to a woman, then you're off the hook for liability. Well, I'm sorry, but this bill doesn't indicate that women are going to get the right information. This bill is nebulous. It does not. It leaves it up to some bureaucrat over in Hess to decide what information a woman needs. It dictates the relationship between a doctor and their patient. And I'm sorry, it holds the doctor more accountable. I disagree from the member from Nome. This puts the doctors on the hook. This says you're liable unless you give the government information. And for that reason, the medical association's against it. And when I heard testimony, I didn't hear one doctor say they were for it. We have informed consent in this state. This elevates informed consent for one procedure above all others. It dictates information, which I don't actually think is going to be the proper information, to give to a patient. Oh, and by the way, you didn't really know what you were doing, so make sure you reviewed for 24 hours before you come back. I'd like to talk about two myths, I think, about this bill. And they come from testimony, women who my hearts go out to, that testified in Hess. One woman said that we needed this bill because over a 10-year period, she had 3 abortions and no one told her that she would ever feel this way. Think about it. People are pretty smart on this floor. Think about whether this bill would solve that situation. You hand someone a pamphlet, and that's going to tell them how they're going to feel 3 times, and that's going to do it. This bill is going to solve that. I feel for that woman and what she's going through right now. This bill doesn't even come close to dealing with that issue. The second one, I think, was the best testimony that I've heard ever, and it was written testimony. And for those of you who were in the Hess Committee, you'll know it when I say it was Isaiah's mom. And it was actually someone from your area, Mr. President. A woman, unfortunately, was told that her child was probably not going to make it when it was born and had to make a very difficult choice. And her, along with her family and her physician, in privacy, not with the government interference,
made the choice to keep the child. And I have a lot of respect for this woman. And unfortunately, what happened to her was every step along the way, she had someone say, are you sure you want to keep it? Are you sure you want to do this? This child's not going to make it. You might not make it. In my opinion, Mr. President, it is something that the medical board should deal with. It's not dealt with in this bill. And I guess my biggest issue with this bill is it sanctions what happened to her. It has the government say, are you sure? Are you sure you want an abortion? Are you sure? Ah, come back. Are you sure? We're going to give you some information. Are you sure? And in that, it's government-sanctioned harassment for what happened to her. Are you sure you want to have this child? It might not be healthy. Are you sure you want to have this child? You're poor. Are you sure you want to have this child? You're a single parent. It doesn't matter where you come on this issue at all. It comes down to where we're going to decide government interferes with someone's choice. So with that, Mr. President, I thank you.
Thank you. Do we have further debate? Senator Seekins?
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in support of this bill, and you'll note that I am a co-sponsor. I am a father, I have a wife, I have two daughters. I don't think there's anything wrong or obnoxious about information, especially when it's information that a person should have a right to know. You know, I don't know, I guess we all know people who have had abortions and suffered or gained in their own opinion. I remember my niece was told that her second child, that there was something wrong with this child in utero and she should have an abortion, or that she should consider having abortion. She made a hard choice because she thought she might have a disabled child. But she made that choice after talking with her parents, with her husband, with another physician, and got all the information that she could. She decided that she was going to take the chance. And today that little boy is one of the best young swimmers in the state of Montana, and he's very healthy and very active. It takes more than his mother just to keep up with him. She just needed to know. She just had information. She's glad now. She says, Uncle Ralph, I'm glad I didn't have that abortion. I'm glad I sought that information. But when I look at this, I think also back to when I had to have a wisdom tooth taken out. And my dentist sent me over to a dental surgeon, and the dental surgeon made me sit down in a chair, and I had to watch about a 20-minute videotape that showed me all of the possible complications of having that wisdom tooth taken out. And then I had to sign a form that I had watched that tape and understood that those complications were there before he would reschedule me to take the wisdom tooth out. And then I look at another friend of mine who sent her daughter down to the health center to have a vaccination. The daughter was a minor. They said, well, we can't do that vaccination without permission from your mother or your father or your guardian. So the girl called Mom and said, Mom, can you tell him? And they said, well, you don't understand. Not only do you have to have permission, but your guardian has to be here when we do the vaccination. And I think if we take such care in making sure that parents, for an example, have got the information of what can happen in a vaccination, and have to sign permission and be there for a vaccination, that certainly we should be careful that we don't have what happened in Appalachia recently, and that were doctors, medical doctors, who were rogues, who were writing prescriptions for high-powered drugs because they could make money doing it. And I think you can find the same thing could be possible of a medical doctor who's a rogue who just wants the money from performing the abortion. Could tell the woman things like, well, you know, it's only a blob of flesh until it's just this old. Don't worry about it. Nothing bad will happen. You'll feel better afterwards. And I know of cases where a boyfriend who didn't want the responsibility of having to be financially responsible for a potential child pressured his girlfriend into getting an abortion. Just those little protections. We're not standing in the way of anyone here and saying, you can't have an abortion. It's a federal law. You can. That's your choice. The reason I support it is if I'm going to err on the side of protecting or not protecting, I prefer to err on the side of protection. Protection that someone knows the full ramifications, especially a minor, especially someone who's being pressured, that they have that full information, and that's why I support this bill.
We have further debate. Seeing none, Senator Dyson, wrap up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. I don't want to insult anyone here, and the comments I make will be, by and large, general. I do not believe there's anyone in this room that likes the idea of killing an unborn child, and I don't think any of you are enthusiasts for it, and I respect that. Several items came up here that I'll answer quickly. Virtually all the physicians, when they're dealing with a pregnant woman, will date the gestation period from halfway between the last two menstrual cycles, and that information can be got over the phone. The issue of rape and incest under federal law, Hyde Amendment, rape and incest are treated differently, perhaps appropriately. I just want to remember that the reason abortion is different than other surgical procedures is that we're dealing with a human life. And we ought always to take that into account. And if you don't believe it's a human life, then you've got to believe that children come from the stork or some kind of religious hocus-pocus that they become a human being when they slide down the birth canal. I put a picture down in my office of a prenatal surgery that was being done to repair a heart on a little baby in the uterus, and the baby reaches out and has got a hold of the finger of the surgeon. That's a real person in there, a person that knows its mother's voice, will respond to music, and knows when you can tell from the blood pressure and blood chemistry when the mother's upset. We're talking about a real person. That's why abortion is different than all medical procedures. And I don't accuse anyone in this room of it, but you want to watch out when you start defining any human beings as not worthy of protection. That's the route that all the oppressors of our history have gone down. The group you don't like, that are inconvenient, you define them as subhuman. And our country has a bad record that way, and most minority groups in this country, including some represented here, have suffered greatly when the government decides that you're not fully human enough to be protected by our laws. And I would just watch out for wanting to find a developing unborn child is not human and not valuable. We heard testimony of people railed at us because we were using the word in this bill, unborn child, instead of fetus. Now, we could put the whole bill in Latin. Fetus just means unborn child. It's been 50 years since I took Latin, and I would struggle to understand it. But that is all part, at least it has been, down through history, of wanting to make it okay to oppress a group of people, to change the nomenclature, make them less than human. I resent the comments by my friend from West Anchorage that somehow or the other something he found on the internet about what somebody said about informed consent applies to my motivation. It's a logic trail that I don't recognize, and I absolutely resent the guilt by association and the inference of what my and the others who have co-sponsored this bill are what we're about. Certainly I hope that there are fewer abortions in the future, but I don't believe that getting more information to people's hands is a bad thing. A couple other things came up when in rape and incest, you know, terrible thing, huge impact. We don't always have to punish the child. You guys want to put a bill in to capital punishment for rapists? I'll be there. Let's punish the rapist, not the unborn child. Why pick out this procedure? Because we're dealing with another human being. Most competent gynecologists I know, OBGYNs, realize they have two patients. They have the mother and an unborn child. Equal responsibility to look out for the health of both. And that's what I think most physicians will do. I want to just refer to a couple of the letters we got. I'm not going to read them, but I will look at the notes as we are informed we have the possibility to do. Certainly the young woman from Tok that my friend from East Anchorage and I both respect. She talked about the doctors there not only really encouraged her to abort this child, and that was a decision that she didn't make, but she didn't feel like she got accurate information. The one that talked about how she still was bothered, she said, "Nobody told me." There, when you look at family pictures of my family, she says, three are missing. They would have been 30, 23, and 20 years of age. My children grew up without three siblings because nobody told me that I could carry these children to term, that there would be help and support for me. Nobody told me how I would feel 30 years later. I know adult women that are still marking the days that their children that they aborted would have been born and mourning their passing. She said, the noise of the vacuum that killed my child only lasted for 20 minutes. The pain of those moments that last for 30 years, nobody told me. The last one, I just wanted to read one quote from this woman from Homer said, "If you vote against SB 30, you are saying in effect that women are not competent enough to be trusted with the facts regarding the health of their own bodies and that of their unborn child. And no vote says you have no compassion for families and believe that doctors are better suited to make decisions for women and their unborn babies." I've been in jail twice for participating in picketing and blocking abortion clinics. All of my children have been in jail, and my wife on the same thing. I think one of the times was when I was serving on the Anchorage Assembly. I think I was then, and maybe still am, the only elected official in the state who was arrested while in office. Months after that, a woman came to the assembly chambers with a child. She said, "The day you were there, I came to abort my child. And because you were there blocking the doors," she said, I went away. But on the sidewalk, some women talked to me. And they explained to me the support that they and others would be if I would choose to carry the child to term. She said, "I went away and thought about it and decided to keep that child. And I got a chance to hold that child." I have a friend of mine that lives in the valley, who's a medical doctor. Her daughter was conceived in the worst of circumstances, in the midst of a gang rape. Does it get any worse than that? She was 14. That child is the delight of her life. She didn't choose to punish the child for what was done to her by a bunch of jerk males. I encourage your support of this bill.
Senator DeGas, a brief comment.
Brief comment. I respect my friend from Eagle River and support him full-heartedly. It's important to know, though, especially I rise on that third letter. I'm sure he knew I was going to. Unfortunately, everything my friend from Eagle River talked about, this bill doesn't help. If we want to deal with those issues, then let's deal with those issues. This bill just is government-sanctioned harassment. If you want to deal with let's reduce the abortions, let's deal with it. This doesn't do it.
We have further debate. Seeing none, the question before the body is, shall the Senate pass committee substitute for Senate Bill 30, Judiciary Amended? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will tally the roll.
12 yeas, 8 nays.
So by a vote of 12 yeas, 8 nays, Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 30, Judiciary Amended, has passed the Senate.
CS for Senate Bill number 100, Finance, an act making capital appropriations, supplemental appropriations, and reappropriations, capitalizing funds, making other appropriations, and providing for an effective date.
We are in third reading. Do we have debate?
Mr. President.
Brief at ease.